Let's start with the state budget. John Hunter, what were some of the things we were kind of looking for? This is actually Governor Noem's second state budget because she did a state budget proposal. She kind of came out last year with one, and now this is her first on her own. Anything that you were anticipating going in?
Well, we'd heard things in advance of this. I think probably they may have leaked that intentionally, that the budget was going to be tight, that revenues were coming in, tax revenues were coming in slightly below forecast for the year that we're in, that ends June 30th, 2020. And so usually when that happens, that means the next year forecast might get trimmed a little bit too. So I think we were preparing a little bit for some austerity, and that I think is essentially what was delivered. So and from that sense, it wasn't a surprise, but it is... It is not a robust spending plan.
Jonathan Ellis, this seems like something we kind of hear every year, that that the budget's going to be tight. But this year there were some specific things that have kind of caused the crunch, one of them being an international trade war.
International trade war, commodity prices are low. That obviously affects, a large segment of our economy, if not the largest segment of our economy. So that affects then, of course, sales tax revenues, which is the lifeblood of how we fund government services in this state, as opposed to, say, having an income tax. And then also, there was a predicted, I mean, we knew that South Dakota was going to lose a revenue source via the federal government. South Dakota has been a state that has taxed internet access services, of course, because we tax all services. And we were one of just a handful of states that allowed that tax. And the federal government has been trying to abolish that tax for years, and finally went ahead, and we've been grandfathered in all these years, and finally they've ended that tax. States are allowed to have that tax. So we knew that was coming, and sort of the exchange there is that we knew we would also get some additional revenues from taxing sales tax, internet purchases. So there was some trade-off here and there, but we knew that big internet access tax would be coming to an end, and so that was foreseeable. And as John said, we could kind of predict that there would be some austerity coming.
And as we look at that that tax going away, not so great for the state budget coffers. But John Hunter, it's really tax relief for South Dakotans who pay for internet service, right?
Right. I think they're trying to emphasize that too. That $30 million or so would be in consumers' pockets. Those people, and most people, purchase internet access in some form or another. About two-thirds of that would go to the state, so $20 million. But municipalities will end up having slightly lower taxes from this as well. But I think you could equate that to a tax cut. It wasn't voluntary necessarily for it, but it is a reduction in tax. And in a lot of cases, that can stimulate an economy, even in small ways.
Right. Governor Noem made clear at the beginning that she was not going to give us a comprehensive line-by-line look at everything in her budget proposal, but we could tell what her priorities are by the things that she did highlight. John Hunter, what stood out to you?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Lori, because that's, I think, true to what she has been saying. And that's really what stuck with me with the budget address, is like, these are the things that I campaigned on. These are the things that I believe in, that I've been saying. And so we're going to back that up. And so certainly the attacking the meth epidemic, as it's described in South Dakota, is putting money toward that, toward trying to getting broadband internet access to rural areas in South Dakota. She has been talking about that. So those are clearly priorities. And I think, an emphasis on foster care. She really, I think, has an interest in the next generation. She's campaigned on that she would try to work all her policies with the future in mind. And so I think she did that. And so any of the kind of new items or extraordinary items, either we're dealing with things that she has talked about or, in general, generations to come.
Right. And that meth conversation does harken back to the election and campaign promises, especially in the sense of treatment, not just enforcement, but Jonathan Ellis, she's asking for money for treatment and enforcement. Here, as well as we've all been talking about the campaign for awareness. So three-legged stool here. What did you notice about what she was saying about meth as far as, you know, this is her time as well to lay out why this is such a problem in South Dakota, which a lot of people maybe didn't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think she talked about how meth, you know, a startling statistic was that, you know, youth in the state are reporting using that in the last year, using that drug at, you know, more than the national average, twice the national average, which I think anybody who understands, you know, methamphetamine and what it does, oh, that's a startling statistic right there.
Right.
And so obviously she's trying to attack that. And we've all talked about the controversial ad campaign, but I mean, that was a priority, and then she's definitely doubling down on that and putting more money into that area.
John Hunter, let's talk about things like the money headed to bolster cybersecurity, because that directly affects Madison.
It does. She, right, and I think economic development that goes with that, too. She earmarked about $400,000 for an incubator, which would create jobs coming out of the cybersecurity. We know what's going on at Dakota State is preparing students for this exploding industry. I mean,
right.
You just couldn't imagine the demand for these graduates. You know, the government certainly, but all private industry, they're just eager to get these cybersecurity things. So rather than having companies from Baltimore or from Virginia take all the graduates, best and brightest from South Dakota, that she and others, myself included, would love to keep those jobs in South Dakota. And as you know, that cybersecurity work certainly could be done from anywhere. It is done from anywhere, and the attacking is done from anywhere.
Right.
So we think South Dakota is a great place to do that, and so she is designating some money for that.
Also in this area of what she's calling next generation industries is investment in healthcare training for the medical field. And let's talk a little bit about education, because that could be controversial to some. She said, you know, no raises for state employees and teachers, but that money is going to go to, you know, different areas. Jonathan, do you think state employees and teachers and, you know, providers are going to be satisfied with that?
One word answer, no.
Nope.
But, you know, I think that, you know, I think that what this does is probably opens the door for lawmakers to come in and be the, you know, where be the good guys, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, you know, they'll maybe find some funding. And, you know, I think, you know, even a 1% increase for all of those areas, I mean, it's probably within the scope of what they can do. It's interesting that this budget, you know, does take kind of the blueprint of the Dennis Dugard budget versus the way Mike Rounds would budget. And so it includes no reserve money to balance next year's budget. So, you know, Mike Rounds would occasionally do that. He would use reserve money for ongoing spending. You know, she did propose some reserve money for the current year, but that again is kind of in the mold of Dennis Dugard. It was kind of, most people would say it's much more fiscally conservative, a mold in which you don't rely on reserves for next year's spending.
All right. She did mention long-term care services, which again, many people are not going to say or are going to say is not enough. But mental health was not on there. You know, there was no slide in the priorities for mental health services and beds after the summer study for lawmakers. I thought that was an interesting omission. John Hunter, any other things that she didn't put in her priorities that you thought were noteworthy?
Well, if I may, Lori, I'd like to back up just on your comment right there on mental health services and elder care and all sorts of kind of, addiction treatment and so forth. Those, we can allocate money to those, and I think she did in this budget address, but I think there's something behind that that's still hard is that we don't have those professionals available. We can say, let's spend an extra $5 million on treatment. Well, we don't have treatment professionals available, and so you do have to take one step back and somehow encourage high school students to consider that as a college discipline and to consider that as a career and so forth. So that's not something you can do in 1 year. But I think, you know, the methamphetamine certainly demands a lot of counseling and all the care that goes with breaking that addiction. And I think there's just a plain shortage of professionals in that area in South Dakota. I think it is, regardless of the money and doing sending money to that area, I think we need professionals to people to do that.
So, John, the investment in $5 million towards construction of a new school of health sciences building at USD, is that addressing that in some way, or is that a separate conversation, do you think?
No, I think it is. I think it is. Not necessarily mental health or addiction services, but all sorts of growth areas. And we're blessed, I think, in South Dakota, if that's the correct term, I don't know, but to have two major health systems in South Dakota plus a major health system in the west part of the state that can offer student opportunities, practicums. You know, the USD certainly can place, or any other people who want to get into healthcare, there are plenty of those placements available in South Dakota. The future jobs are in South Dakota. It's a great industry for us. You know, if you're at Gustavus Adolphus, let's say in Minnesota, they can't put a nursing program together because they don't have a hospital that would allow those practicums to take place. But in South Dakota, we're full of opportunities. So yes, I do think that the addressing the health sciences area at USD is a great investment, and hopefully that will produce students, graduates, career people who will fill needs that South Dakota has in the future.
Jonathan, anything that you thought that was omitted, at least in the priorities area of the conversation, that you found noteworthy?
Well, this budget address was different than, again, going back to Dennis Dugard, who would his budget addresses would be very long and quite detailed. And this one, I think, would be summed up as, it was brevity. There are probably a lot of details that we have to get into it and explore the details. And I know that lawmakers on the Appropriations Committee are going to be doing that. So there are probably going to be some things in here that we have that weren't highlighted that we will have to take a look at. So there's more, because this was a shorter kind of higher level budget address than what we're used to from the previous 8 years of Dennis Dugard. There's more to look at, I guess, in this budget. You got to open the hood of this thing and tinker with it.
Right, and she did mention in her opening remarks opensd.gov and the goal for more greater transparency with how many of those slides are available. Are you noticing, Jonathan, a measurable difference in transparency with this administration?
I would not. I mean, I have not been in a position to test that. I think that Dennis Dugard was very transparent, in terms, especially on budget issues. So I can't say one way or another.
John Hunter, any thoughts on that, on transparency? Are we seeing a change?
I'm kind of formulating my opinion as well. I think Governor Noem has been eager to be transparent and has worked with agencies have done that. So in general, I would give a good score to that. Again, following Dennis Dugard, who was also made transparency a priority, I would probably give them both good grades at this point. But I think I'm still formulating an opinion on that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about another top political news story, and that is Minnehaha County State's Attorney Aaron McGowan. We've spoken about him on this program before. Jonathan Ellis has covered it along with his colleagues at the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. You can find all that coverage at argusleader.com. $35,000 and an agreement to step away. Jonathan, what's the latest on this agreement between McGowan and the county commissioners?
Well, there is an agreement in place. It called for a one-time payout of $35,000, and there's some releases in there about who can sue, not being allowed to sue the county. We don't know. They're talking about transparency. There's been very little transparency about what led up to this, but we do know that there wouldn't have been an agreement without some kind of negotiation that took place. And there was obviously a reason that the county commission was willing to pay McGowan to leave. Right. You know, you don't, an elected official, it's odd that an elected official would get money to resign, but in this case, he did. And there was obviously a reason for that.
Right. And this became a risk management issue. So for background and clarity, he's been with the state's attorney. He's been the Minnehaha County state's attorney and elected official for 11 years. In July, Argus Leader reported on his absence from work after some knee surgeries, unexplained absences. As those stories unfolded, South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg and DCI conducted an investigation. And then there's another investigation. Jonathan, paint the picture of risk management, and who is this this other investigative body?
Well, I mean, the county became alarmed at what was disclosed within Attorney General Roundsburg's investigation, in particular an incident that was highlighted with a female employee. There was a strong suggestion that there was some inappropriate behavior that took place there. I think the county, recognizing that it's on the hook liability-wise for, you know, misconduct issues immediately.
And this was specifically, she gets a day off in exchange for bringing alcohol to his house. We should be specific about what happened with the female employee.
At the very least, it was a quid pro quo of, I'll give you a day off if you buy me a bottle of booze and let me come over and drink it. I mean, at the very least, it's a quid pro quo. There was also, again, some undertones, maybe some other stuff, going on. And so the county, recognizing the liability issue following the release of that report, asked its own risk management, and I should say that this is not the county. I mean, there was a media report that sort of tried to undercut our reporting. I don't know why they are doing that, but in which they said the county is not investigating. Well, of course, the county has an insurance company that does that, and it's an Aberdeen law firm that specializes in employment law issues, and certainly they were brought in to assess what was going on. Not just on sexual harassment issues, some other issues, but primarily focusing on the treatment of potentially female employees in that office. My understanding is that there were not a great number of interviews conducted in there, both with current and former employees, and there were some big red flags that came out of those interviews.
So county commissioners are really focusing on the future, and the employees of the state's attorney's office saying these people have been through a lot lately, and we're hoping to move forward. How long, Jonathan, before they can get a replacement in for Aaron McGowan?
I think it'll be fairly quick. The office, I think they laid out the time frame of about 2 weeks. I think that's a fairly quick turnaround. There are some highly experienced prosecutors within that office, so I don't think they have to go far to find somebody who would be very capable of taking over.
John Hunter, the story continues to unfold that we've been covering and talking about really since, for weeks now. And any final thoughts before we close the book on today's conversation about Aaron McGowan?
Well, I think the $35,000 payment, I think, might be slightly different than presented. And that is, I don't believe it was a payment to ask him to resign. I think it was a payment to release the county from any future action that may go with that. So you never know how the legal world works, but if you looked at that agreement, it said, kind of in exchange for this money, you agreed never to do this and this and this and this and this, a long list of things pursuing, saying whether it's wrongful termination or, who knows what would be there. So I think the $35,000 was less. I think he was going to resign anyway. I think the $35,000 was more for releasing, trying to get, and it may have been recommended by this alliance, the insurance alliance, in order to put an end to possible liabilities.
All right, and we don't know, as Jonathan said, what all went into that negotiation, what was said, what was unsaid. We'll continue to follow the story, and you can follow Jonathan Ellis at argusleader.com. And John Hunter remind me your website, please.
Daily Leader Extra.
Thank you. DailyLeaderExtra.com in Madison. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori. Yeah, thank you, Lori.